This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on, laundry workers rally to protest privatization and save union jobs.
Well, now, rather than complying with a federal court order to choose among five plans to increase hiring of African-American and Latino candidates for the New York City Fire Department to reverse longstanding discrimination, Mayor Bloomberg chooses to suspend hiring for the next class of 300 firefighters.
This will result in short staffing in the department and an expensive increase in overtime pay. The class action lawsuit was initiated in 2002 by the Department of Justice and the Vulcan Society, the fraternal organization of New York City black firefighters, against New York City's discriminatory hiring practices.
Now, Bloomberg to Fire Department Vulcans, kind of burn, baby, burn. We're joined by Paul Washington, the past president of the Vulcan Society, that is Captain Washington, of the New York City Fire Department, and Richard Levy, attorney to the Vulcan Society.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity.
And Captain, help us understand, in a city that now has a majority population of black, Latino, Asian residents, etc., what exactly is the ratio and what is the disparity in terms of representation of African-American, Latino, and so on, firefighters to white firefighters?
The New York City Fire Department is about 90% white. 3% of the New York City Fire Department is black. Approximately 5% or almost 6% is Hispanic. Asians are just a handful, maybe two, three dozen. And women, only about 30 or so women. It's out of a department of 11,500 firefighters. So the numbers are abysmal. They're terrible. We are by far the least diversified major city in the United States. Several things have to be going on. There almost has to be a concerted effort to keep people of color out. So one problem with people of color coming onto the job is a poor recruitment effort by the fire department. In the past, they've done almost nothing to recruit people of color onto a job. And this had to be done because we were effectively blocked from the job for so many years. They've recently done better in terms of recruitment, but it's still not where it should be. Another problem, of course, was the test that's given to see who's going to become a firefighter or not. It's long been our contention that how you score on the written test bears no relation to how good a firefighter you're going to be. And it just so happens, coincidentally, that whites do much better on this test than blacks. Of course, it's not a coincidence. So therefore, blacks end up at the bottom of these lists and never get reached. Now, that would be fine if the guy who got a 99 on the test was going to be better than the man or woman who got a 90 on the test, but that's just not the case. So that's another way that we're kept off of the job. And also, we find certainly that black candidates coming through the process are often kept off of the job for minor problems in their background that a white candidate would not be kept off of the job for. For instance, we once had a guy who was kept off of the job because years before he had jumped a turnstile, and they said, no, we're not going to allow him in, when white candidates with much more severe type of infractions were allowed onto the jobs.
Richard Levy, the mayor and the lawyer for the city say things are improving. The 2007 test was fairer, recruitment was up, and there was no need for the judge to impose this order that the city choose between five plans to improve the conditions. What would have happened if things had gone along normally, and why did the judge do what he did?
The judge did what he did because he found, based on a whole lot of expert testimony, that the most recent exam was not job-related. The city could not show that there was a relationship between scores on the exam and the probability of performing well as a firefighter. And if you can't show that, you have no justification for using a list that ranks people according to how they did on this exam. These exams tend to be, in part, reading comprehension exams. And by the way, there's virtually no reading done on the firefighter job. And it's interesting how they do these tests. The firefighters themselves and experts rank the most important things for the firefighter job. And the most important mental skill is oral comprehension and oral communication. You can figure out why, when you're at the scene of a fire, that's how you communicate, and that's the most important thing, to be able to convey a message to the public, to the police, to the people in the fire, to the people around. Communication is very important. Does the city test for oral communication or oral comprehension? No. The most important cognitive thing is not tested for. And then if you ask firefighters all the way up the ranks, It doesn't matter whether they're white or black or women or men. The statistics show overwhelmingly that the most important aspect of the firefighter job is physical. It does take a tremendous amount of physical skill of various kinds. Does the city, in this most recent test that the judge set aside, does it test for physical? No, it doesn't. The physical component is completely outside of the scoring they do on the test. So the test winds up being a written test, doesn't include the most important skills, and yet they rank by that test, and the fact that blacks and Latinos do worse on that test than white is used as an excuse to keep them out. But it's not justified.
One thing I'd like to add as well is the mayor continually patting himself on the back for how diverse this class was going to be. They keep throwing out the number 33%. The last class that went in was 33% people of color, only because a promotional list was added to the regular list, a promotional list from EMS. But the class that was going to go in that the mayor needed to hire so badly, but now all of a sudden he doesn't need to hire, was only going to be 21% people of color. 8% black, about 11% Hispanic, but a total of 21% people of color, a total of 25 actual firefighters were going to be black. This is what he's bragging about. This in a city that's 65% people of color going into a department that's 90% white.
I want to just try to understand better the kind of sociological data or what was introduced to the judge relevant to the area of the reading comprehension or the understanding of why whites do better on the test and why that isn't an indicia of certainly one point of why they would have a competency at firefighting. Why does this discrepancy with this test occur?
Why does it occur, is it unrelated to the job?
Well, I think both, really. You're saying it's unrelated to the job, but I think the average person might very well say, well, you know, why shouldn't people do better on the test? Why shouldn't reading comprehension be an indicia of intellectuality, if you will, a component part of being a successful firefighter? I mean, how do you respond to that? I could imagine something like Cardozo talking about the city lawyer perhaps saying that, or certainly it must have been raised in an oppositional way to the arguments being put forward by the Vulcan Society.
Well, Cardozo doesn't say much here. This is all being driven by the mayor, but that's another point. Let's see. There was a hearing on this, and the experts at the hearing said two different things. The city's expert said, look, we tested for a bunch of things. Yes, it was all a written exam, but we were testing for a variety of cognitive skills and other kinds of skills. Some of them have fancy names, speed of closure and deductive reasoning and inductive reasoning. What the city couldn't show, though, was that the questions they asked actually tested for those particular skills or abilities. In other words, they failed to be able to show that what they were purportedly testing for, they were actually testing for. So what wound up was a whole bunch of questions that had no established, no proven, no shown relationship to skills that were needed for the job. Now, people say, and a community may say, oh, well, but isn't it better to have people who did better on a test? Well, you know, no one can say that because, I mean, you can say it, but you can't prove it. And once you show, and this is the legal standard, that a test has a discriminatory impact, meaning blacks or Latinos or any other group, women, do worse on the test, then it becomes the responsibility of the employer, in this case the city, to show that even though it has that bad effect on certain minority groups, it's justified because we need to do it to get the best firefighter or the best policeman or the best anyone else. If you can't show that, then there's no justification for using that particular selection device. And that's what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the ways you can think about this to understand how nutty this is in the fire department is think about the police department. Policemen and policewomen have a tremendous amount of responsibility, discretion, require a lot of skill. They have to deal with the public a lot. They carry firearms. They have enormous amount of power and an enormous amount of complicated situations that they confront. Not just fires, but all kinds of disputes and fights and crimes and so on. Now, the police department tests also. And the police department is more than 51% black and Latino. So how is it that these two jobs, which probably to some extent have comparable skill requirements, how come 51% of the police department is minority And only 3% of the fire department is black and another 4 or 5% Latino. How do you explain that? What Paul pointed out before, Captain Washington said, is that this is the worst demographics of any police department in a major city in the country, which is true. So you say to yourself, well, what about those other police departments? Are they putting out fires? Well, of course they're putting out fires, and they're not having any problem, but they're not keeping the blacks and Latinos out through their testing systems. One of the things they do in some of those departments is they use oral interviews and oral exams to test people, and they don't fall off because of some lack of written skills. So that's really the story here.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the city also concedes that they have no department in the city that lacks diversity as badly as the fire department. You look at any other department in the city, look at corrections, look at sanitation, look at almost any department in the city, and you'll see generally some reasonable approximation of the demographics of the city. The fire department stands out like a sore thumb.
Captain Washington, as a result of the mayor's decision not to implement one of the five court-mandated remedies, basically he's saying he won't hire firefighters for the foreseeable future until they can devise a new test that a court will approve. So what does that do? I mean, the phrase, cutting off your nose to spite your face, came to my mind when I heard this. What does that do to the police?
Actually,
the
racism came to my mind.
Well, that also. But.
Before I answer that, I'd just like to say the only thing that comes close to approximating the fire department's lack of diversity is the mayor's key members, his cabinet.
Right, right.
Which, as we all remember, a few months ago, the Times did a front page story that showed that about 79% of his so-called key members, his inner circle, were white. So it's about the only thing close to the fire department. Now, in terms of what the mayor's going to do, it's, as you say, it's a surprise. They went on and on about how desperately they needed a class of firefighters. They even tried to make the point that it was a matter of public safety for them to hire firefighters. If these firefighters were not hired, the firefighters that are now in the firehouse would have to work excessive amounts of overtime, which would bring on strain and cause a public safety issue. Now, all of a sudden, it's not a safety issue. And we also need to realize that this has been done, these type of consent decrees have been done all over the country for many years. There's many cities, Chicago, Philadelphia, et cetera, that have had these same problems, and these problems were solved by the same type of order that Judge Garifuss just issued.
Isn't it quite extraordinary that the attorney for Corp Counsel representing the city also sent a letter to the judge, really castigating the judge for the suggestion that there be various consent decrees or proposals put forward in lieu of the test to begin to deal with this incredible disparity? Maybe Richard can answer that quickly, and then I want to get back to also Captain Washington on where do the Vulcans go from here and what do you think needs to be done? Richard?
It's really very, very strange that he wrote that letter. First of all, if you think about what the letter says, we don't want to hire this way because it's a bit of a quota and we think it's illegal. Well, the judge just told them it's legal. So why are they fighting the judge when the judge has sanctioned this and said it's fine? You can do it. They have no exposure here. So I have to agree with Mimi. This is not just a question of cutting your nose to spite your face. It's a question of not wanting to put on some additional blacks, apparently, and Latinos. Because here's a judge paving the path for them. He's saying to them, go ahead, I'm giving you the okay. And they're saying, we're not going to do it. We think it's illegal. Well, it's not illegal. It's not even a quota in the sense that that term has generally been used, which means doing an excessive number or an additional number of minority folks to reflect the demographics of a community. Well, that's not what's happening here. What's happening here is just getting basic compliance with the federal and state statute by saying you have to hire the proportion that took the test since you can't use a test itself because it's not valid.
And also, it would be more believable if this was the first time that the mayor stood in the door like, who was it in the civil rights era? George Wallace.
George Wallace.
Segregation now, segregation forever.
They'll have to get federal troops in.
Right, but this isn't the first time he's done this. Every time we've made a proposal that would do something to increase diversity in the fire department, he's been against it. 4 or 5 years ago, we came with him with an idea to redeploy the cadet program, a program that was in place under, of all people, Mayor Giuliani. And it had ended, and we went to him and said, listen, can you restart this cadet program? The answer was no. There's a residency credit that you can get now. If you can prove you're a resident of New York City during a particular time, you get 5 points. a very good idea, but everybody goes around it. It's so easy to get these 5 points if you have not actually been a resident. We went to him and said, can you add some teeth to this? Can you make this rule that exists? Give it some strength. Make it better. No, they couldn't do that. Right now in front of the city council, we have a bill that will give extra points to anyone attempting to become a firefighter if they have graduated from a New York City high school, public or private. It's supported across the board. We've got 34 council members who have co-sponsored this legislation. Everybody likes it, blacks, whites, Republicans. He said no to that as well.
Well, unfortunately, we have about 30 seconds left. So in 15 seconds, Captain Washington, what is to be done? And we're going to leave the last 15 seconds to Attorney Richard Levy. Captain?
We've got to fight. Anybody who's interested in this idea has to let it be known to their local politicians and the mayor that this is we can't stand for this. We've just got to keep fighting.
Richard Levy?
I got a call today from a firefighter who's on the list, and I have met with both minority and white firefighters, and I've all told them all the same thing. Not only do we favor them hiring the people who have qualified and who have been on the list, but adding additional blacks so that people are not disrupted and their expectations are not smashed, but the Justice Department of the United States has taken the same position. So for the city to come forward and say we can't do it, when the Justice Department has taken that position, we've taken that position, and the judge has taken that position, is obviously a sham.
And we're going to have to continue to follow up on this very critical issue. And special thanks to Attorney Richard Levy, who represents the Vulcan Society and the Vulcan Society past president and present captain in the New York City Fire Department. And that is our splendid guest, Mr. Paul Washington. Thank you, and continue to struggle, and we'll continue to keep our listeners posted, and we hope aid and support that struggle.
Okay, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Good night, Mimi.
And there are still more outrages to come. In the battle against filth now, the workers at the Brooklyn Central Laundry in East Flatbush are stalwart foot soldiers, union workers that wash the dirty sheets, towels, and uniforms for most of New York City's hospitals, folding more than 10 million pounds of laundry a year. Employees say that the linens sometimes hold body parts. They nearly always contain blood.
But under a proposed reorganization plan announced in May by the Health and Hospitals Corporation, which runs the laundry, the service would be taken over by an undetermined private company. The city says private companies can beat the laundry's price per pound, which the union estimates at being $1.30. Privatization will cause the loss of 120 living wage union jobs.
So while HHC says, get back the workers, fight back. Now to the local 420 rally.
You can't take our jobs! You can't take them! You can't take our jobs! You can't take them! You can't take our jobs! You can't take them!
Back down, never fight forever. We're here to fight forever.
The president and vice president of DC 37, the president of Local 420, my sister, our president, the great, mighty Kwame Ture.
The workers united will never be defeated. The workers united will never be defeated.
Laundry, I'm here to tell you that officially today we filed a lawsuit seeking an injunction against HHC to privatize HHC. This war started 11 years ago. And those of you who have been in the laundry that long, you'll remember the countless nights that we had prayer vigils. You'll remember the rallies that we had at Gracie Mansion. All of our struggles. This is not a new fight for us. But sisters and brothers, we will not give up this fight. We are here to stay. New York is a union town. We will fight to the very end for our jobs. We are the people that make this neighborhood. We are the ones that wake up early in the morning, catch the bus to come to work when everybody else is sleeping. We are going to stay the course. Yeah. And we are going to stay here to the end. We have seen presidents of HHC come, and we've seen them go. And the union is still here. And we'll be here when Mr. Alan Villas leaves. Yeah. food on your table. We will fight this fight. This is union. That's what union is about. We fight together. Okay? So let me say this loud and clear. Every 420 member, when we call, have your shoes ready to walk. This is about Local 420 and our legacy of fighting for those things that we believe in. So stand up. Stand up and fight like you never fight before. Now let's go fight the power.
Company to do their linen. They came to Brooklyn Central Laundry. Everything done at Brooklyn Central Laundry. When they went to the private said, what you gonna pay for us to do your linen? They wanted a price. We did it with no price. We did it because we had to do it because we are Brooklyn Central Laundry and we do the linen for every hospital around. We don't turn nobody away. And let me tell you something. This Angelica is a joke. And they challenged us to say that they could do it better than us. So we went into a competition stage with them. We went into a competition stage for 1 year against Angelica. When the 1 year was up, who you think won?
We won!
Who you think won?
We won!
You're right! We won it! And now we have a contract agreement.
Right.
Signed letter agreement. Signed by Handley. He's a deputy mayor.
All right.
Signed by all the people in this fine-looking building. So I don't understand them. Why are you coming back to my house when we won our house? This got to stop. The buck stops now. And let me tell you something. We're not just fighting for Brooklyn Central Laundry. It spreads. We're fighting for everybody in each hospital. Because if one of us fall, we all go.
That's right.
It's like a domino effect. This hospital is crazy. This city is crazy. So how are they going to tell me they're saving money when they're giving money away? All right? If they want to make money, come talk to us. At Brooklyn Central Laundry, in the last 4 years, we saved this place $2 million. So how is they losing money? And let me tell you something else. I do my home, I do my research. A lot of them consultants is in bed with the buyers and the sellers. They are friends, they are family. That's a conflict of interest. So they bed partners together. Somebody and somewhere in this building, they books need to be checked. Because if you can pay a consultant all this money, why do you need to take people's jobs?
Exactly.
You hired 20 consultants. You paying them millions of dollars. You hire us, you pay us pennies. But you want to take us to pay them. That's the main fact of it all. The buck got to stop. We deserve to keep our job. We fought a $4 fight. We have people at the Brooklyn Central Laundry that had a heart attack and died on the job, keeping the linen rolling to every hospital we deal with. So this got to stop now. They want a war, they got me. All right? front door. Yes. Don't let them push you aside. Move up in the front.
Yes.
When they tell you get on the bus, ride the front seat.
Yes.
Tell them you are somebody.
Yes.
You deserve to work. You deserve to feed your family. You earn this. You ain't got nothing given to you. You earn every penny, every cent, every dime, and your house that you buy, the food you put on your table. You earned it. Ain't nobody gave it to you.
Right.
So why should they take your job
right.
to give it to a private company and they paying them people minimum wage?
Yeah.
They only had the chance to pay their own health coverage. So you gonna take what we got to get to a private company. And another catch to the game, they tell you, we're gonna just change the manager. That's the catch to the whole game. Once they change the manager, they change you. Once you open the door, they close the door. So let me tell you this. The old slang is like this. We fired up.
Can't take no more.
We fired up.
Can't take no more.
We fired up.
Can't take no more.
No more, 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 no more.
Let's give them hell.
All right. Brothers and sisters, that was Mr. Yuli Wright. Junior. Brooklyn Central Laundry in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is Get Back.
We say fight back.
This is Get Back.
We say fight back.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.